The case of Raymond Smith that is before you this morning, Your Honors, demonstrates virtually the same type of prosecutorial misconduct that his court found so egregious in the Spears case.
Could you be, specific? In reading the briefs, I didn't find the same kind of conduct, at least not nearly the extent of it, or the egregiousness of it, I guess, is lack of a better term, as I found in Spears. How does this match up to Spears?
I thought it matched up very carefully, very closely. First of all, there were improper references to what the victim was feeling in the last moments of his life. Identical to one of the comments that was in the Spears case. There was much more egregious conduct in this case by inviting the jury to speculate on facts that were not in evidence. And I'll be very specific as far as that goes. It showed me how persistent the basis of conduct was, I believe. In the prosecutor's opening statement at the trial phase, he stated, and I quote, "Now, as a result of the fact that this group of people had been known to kill all those that are testifying against them, the state moved its court to take his, meaning Michael Smith's, deposition." There was no evidence whatsoever that Raymond Smith or any other person had previously killed any other witness in any other case whatsoever. And for that statement to be made without any basis in fact, was the first major problem that I saw in this case. That conduct continued throughout the closing arguments of the penalty state, where in the closing argument, the assistant prosecutor stated, and I quote again, "The state took his, meaning Michael Smith's, deposition so that the motive to kill him would not exist." So what we have here is a case where Raymond Smith was charged with and ultimately convicted of killing a witness in a felony three drug trial, with the prosecutor telling the jury that he had done this before in other cases. And that simply is not the case. There is no evidence whatsoever that was introduced at trial or at the mitigation that this type of conduct had occurred. When we tie that into the improper references to other wrongs and acts that were engaged in this trial, then I think that we reached that level that the court was concerned about in Spears. For instance, there was a statement that the car that they had used had been used for other criminal acts. They had used this for other criminal acts, meaning repeated drug dealing throughout the course of the conduct. And there was evidence of this, but it was improperly admitted. There are a number of cases that deal, and I cited them in my brief, with the fact that under 404, other crimes and acts cannot be introduced, obviously, to prove that he committed the crime that he was ultimately convicted of. One of the things that makes this very difficult is that the court, despite repeated introductions of other crimes, never once gave any type of an instruction, a cautionary instruction, as to the proper use of this evidence. We submit that the evidence should not have been introduced at all, but assuming arguendo that some of it should have been introduced, at least to prove the aggravating circumstance, the court was duty-bound, as was trial counsel, to raise issues as to that particular issue. We believe also that there were certainly suggestions and implications of the nature and circumstances of the offense were aggravating circumstances. We find in the record that there was a denigration of the defense counsel. I think at one point the prosecutor looked at the jury and said he, referring to trial counsel, was doing what I cautioned you about, which was similar to the magic act that the court talked about in Spears. And also, in the penalty phase, there were discussions or there were comments made to the jury that the jury would violate their oath of office if anything less than the death penalty were imposed, and or that the law required the jury to impose the death second, that this came during the cross-examination of the testimony of Raymond's first cousin, Mr. Hill. He also stated to the jury during that cross-examination that something about putting no stock in the jury's verdict during that. So we believe that many of those...
Get back, at get the context of the comment that the jury that violated his oath of office.
Yes, when the prosecutor was cross-examining in the penalty phase that witness on the appeal, which was Raymond Smith's first cousin, when he was cross-examining him, he said, and I don't have direct quote here, but it is in brief, Mr. Hill, so you're not putting any stock in the verdict of these 12 people, and so you're telling Mr. Hill that he didn't put the jury in the oath of life sentence. So the prosecutor said, it was at one time, so you're telling the jury to violate the oath of office, meaning by the oath, within the form of a question. It was in the form of a question. And then he repeated that by saying that the jury would be violating their oath of office if the law required the jury to impose the death sentence. So certainly those types of arguments were made not only during the questioning, but during the closing argument of the penalty phase as well. As Mr. Swerdankle will discuss in a moment, we believe that this case takes the digital step beyond the spirit, and that the evidence of guilty will not be overlooked, especially in line with the vision of the improper
kind of
We also suggest to the court that there's a gross issue here, and when you look at the jury instruction that was given, there certainly was not the lone juror instruction, even though this case was tried before gross, that the exact same issues as gross are prevalent in this case. And as the court will recall, the court vacated Antonio Gross' death sentence during that time. There was also language in the court's instruction regarding the unanimity of the death sentence before it was being going to be permitted to discuss the life sentence as well. We also believe and argue this morning that if any of these issues were not completely raised or protected by trial counsel, that this would constitute ineffective assistance of counsel. And unless the court has any additional questions, we ask Mr. Swerdankle to address his
Thank you, Mr. Sugarman. Mr. Swerdankle.
Raymond Smith turned and brandished a gun and
stop at a Speedway gas station. Again, not specified as to where exactly in which county Speedway gas station was. They proceeded to Cleveland, where they all participated in basically an hour or so of riding around, partying, and smoking crack cocaine. So the characterization of the events as Raymond Smith holding Ron Lally at gunpoint in the car, in other words, an implication of kidnapping or abduction, is simply not the case. Had it been so, clearly the state would have charged under A2 of the aggravated murder statute, where a murder is committed in the course of a kidnapping. It would have been much simpler for them to do that. However, the evidence did not support that. Instead, they had to try to prove prior calculation and design. And they did this largely by a theory of some sort of common design or purpose between Danny Smith and Raymond Smith. Had evidence in Danny Smith's out-of-court statement. Now, the threshold problem is fact theory, the conspiracy theory, didn't perhaps be intended to prove other conspiracy induced at trial before such out-of-court statements of a co-conspirator can be admitted. There was never any proof of any independent proof of this conspiracy. The entire group of conspiracy, in fact, consisted merely of Danny Smith's statements, which is, again, an impermissible way of proving conspiracy, or thus proving prior calculation and design in this case. None of the statements of Danny Smith crossed the threshold requirement of relevance to Raymond Smith's case. Raymond Smith was never present when any of these statements were made. He was never the subject of any of these statements. There is no evidence that he in any way adopted, ratified, or acquiesced in these statements. So the relevance in this case, again, is simply the argument that there was a common purpose and scheme based upon the fact that they were co-defendants in a pending drug case.
So how about the parent, son, the father-son relationship, and that the father was coming forth in the, from the beginning in order to help Danny make some kind of deal? I mean, that was the original deal to confess, you know, for Raymond to come forward and say what happened to Lally. That was all part of something to help. The father was trying to help the son. Does that matter? But the conspiracy, is that at all relevant to the idea?
I don't believe it is. I don't believe that has anything to do with establishing a conspiracy to commit murder in the first. All that shows is that fatherly concern for his son and an attempt to help his son to avoid the potential death penalty. That certainly does not establish a conspiracy. I don't know whether the court wants me to go through the individual statements made by Danny Smith and discuss the hearsay exceptions that are simply not applicable in this case, but I think the brief adequately addresses those unless you have specific questions on them. The introduction of these statements, which we believe were inadmissible, allowed the state to then argue that there was prior calculation and design on Raymond Smith's part, based solely on statements made months before and after the killing of Ron Lally took place. That does not establish sufficient prior calculation and design on Raymond Smith's part. In effect, the only evidence that's really here is that a murder or a killing is that look at most favorably to the state, that murder legislation is designed there based on the actions that took place in the prior Harvard County.
Mr. Swedenko, do you discount the prior in terms of prior calculation and design, the concept that this ruse, that it was a ruse to get Lolly to a place where his, you know, to kill him in a cemetery somewhere where he wouldn't be identified early, or you know, they'd have more cover? Is that that they had their plan in Lorain County to transport him to somewhere that they'd find, and it turned out to be outside their county? Does that make
that is,
do you discount it?
That is a theory that the state presented, but it's not grounded in any actual evidence or fact that they can point to in the record. And they can theorize all they want. Well, this is an elaborate ruse, and it was orchestrated, and the Court of Appeals itself even used similar terms. It was an elaborate and intricate plan based on very confusing testimony of, I believe it was Sandra Hopkins, about people being driven around and shuffled, and some people getting out of the car, and other people getting in, and people driving around town for a while before, as the last thing she saw was that Sam Jalowick was driving a car. There were three people in the car with him, and she couldn't identify who they were.
The victim was transported out of Lorain County, we know that.
Yes.
By the folks who eventually murdered him, or, you know, there's testimony that they did kill him.
Yeah,
and he was found in Cuyahoga County.
Yes. But there is no evidence that the specific purpose, specific intent to murder was ever existed in Lorain County, except by speculation based on circumstances and based on that's to these things an extremely tenuous basis on which to establish venue, and also just to establish the element of prior calculation. Mm-hmm. The evidence, the testimony of Michael Smith in his deposition, was that they talked about, well, what do you want to do? Well, how about we take you to the Greyhound station, give you some money, get you out of town, and he agreed to that. And then everybody went around, parted, had a good time. Whenever if there was a change of mind at that point, that occurred in Cuyahoga County, clearly did not occur in Lorain County.
But isn't that just as speculative to say that? Isn't that equally speculative to say, gee, it must have occurred in Cuyahoga?
I certainly think there's more evidence in support of that than there is of the theory that they sat around and concocted this plan.
But actually, there's no... Is there any evidence about the plan?
No.
Either way?
There is not.
So the... Okay.
Again, that's a matter of speculation. Very briefly, I'd also like to address Proposition of Law 2, which was the admission of Michael Smith's deposition testimony at trial. Criminal Rule 15 requires one of four factors be shown before a deposition of a witness, particularly witness against the accused, can be allowed into testimony in lieu of, or allowed into evidence in lieu of that witness's actual appearance at trial. None of these four factors were demonstrated in this case, and it was therefore an abuse of discretion by the court to allow the deposition transcript to be entered in lieu of his own actual appearance. Michael Smith is clearly the key witness against Liam Smith, because he's the only material witness of the actual events surrounding the death of Tom Wallace. There was no showing that Michael Smith was dead or ill, or that he was out of the state. Contrary to the Court of Appeals statement, there was no evidence, no actual evidence presented by any witness to the fact that he was out of state during the trial. That was presented to the court through a statement, an unsworn statement by the prosecutor himself. testimony shows no subpoena was ever, any subpoena was ever even drawn up for Michael Smith. There was never any attempt to serve him with a subpoena. There was not even any attempt to locate him until, according to the testimony of one of the detectives, they began to look for him the night before the trial. It's clear that once the deposition was taken, that the state really did not care whether or not he actually appeared at trial. He was in protective custody at the time the deposition was taken. As soon as the deposition was taken and they had his testimony preserved, they let him go. He lived in Cleveland for a while. They knew he had been arrested about 2 weeks prior to the initial trial date. He was, they had a warrant for his arrest for probation violation, yet they didn't take custody of him. In fact, he was early released from Cuyahoga County.
Would he, on what basis could he have been held, I guess?
People are held on probation violation holders also.
Oh, he'd be a violator?
That's in the record, so that he was served a warrant on his arrest for probation violation, and he could have been held on that basis easily. And again, they could have continued protective custody. Why they chose to release him from protective custody after they gave the deposition, they really had no intention of making any good faith effort to secure his presence at trial. There are no more questions. I'd like to reserve our remaining 6 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Dingell.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosenbaum. Specifically with what you disagree?
Well, one of the last things that he just said that I wrote down in my brief was that we began to look for Michael Smith the night before the trial. That's absolutely refuted by the record. That was not true. Well, there may not have been a subpoena issued for the stand, but a warrant was issued. There was great testimony taken, or great efforts made in testimony documents, the efforts to bring this man to court. But the judge did not abuse his discretion in holding that someone who is the key witness in a case where the victim, who is also a witness against these same people, was murdered, there might need to be a reason to protect him. It might be difficult for us to house him in the same jail with his father, his brother, and his other co-defendants, Stanley Jellwick, and guarantee his safety. It might also not be so outlandish to release him from protective custody after the deposition is taken in the hopes that the preservation of that testimony would destroy the motive to kill this man when he was informed at that deposition that the testimony would be admissible even if he killed him. There's no reason to do so. And despite all that, there is testimony in the record that this defendant threatened Michael Smith to kill him at the conclusion of that deposition. So maybe we didn't issue a subpoena. We couldn't serve anybody. We didn't have any. We issued a warrant, which we couldn't serve. So to say that we somehow did not desire to turn this man in court and embark upon a course of conduct to ensure that is just absolutely false, unfair, and it itself borders upon being ethical. Now, the truth is that the motive to kill is with a great part of the state's case here, and part of that motive was that this man was a witness. But let us not forget that these people were in the business of drug trafficking, and I can simply argue that you cannot succeed as a drug trafficker and continue in your business if your clientele will turn on you. And the way to prevent that is to kill these people to turn on you. So the violent nature of the death was not only relevant as a response to mitigation pursuant to Oregon Stall, but was also admissible as the nature and circumstances of the aggravating circumstance, not the offense, and that is proper conduct. And what I am suggesting and what I am arguing today, as I did then, was these people made a business decision to kill this man in a brutal and violent manner, not only to stop him from testifying, but so they can continue the only way they had to make a living, and this has been Raymond Smith was an addict. He had to traffic to feed his habit. He could not afford to stop, and he could not afford to have people working with the police, so he killed them. So the brutal manner in which this man was killed is part of the nature and circumstances of the aggravating circumstance, as well as proper mitigation to show that he was not compassionate or that this was not some sort of joyride where everybody was partying and having a great time. The issues presented by the defense in this case at this level merely beg why the state did what they did. To claim that the man was having a good time when he said, okay, I will testify at some point after a gun was drawn, after some point where he's been abducted out into, taken out into the country through deception and confronted with all the people that needed to testify against that particular day, January 19th, 1994, the date of the trial, is enough to scare anybody. And to say that because he said, okay, I'll take the cocaine, okay, I'll get out of town, I'll beg the issue in this case. And it is not so outrageous that the jury could not be found to be a rational trier of fact, or that these inferences could possibly support the conviction in this case.
Counsel, why try and
because that's where everything happened other than the actual killing. We had a choice with our case, it was our informant, but despite what the defense counsel said, there was an elaborate and carefully orchestrated series of events that occurred in Lorain County. In fact, everything about this killing occurred in Lorain County, except for the actual shooting, stabbing, and running over of the car. And despite its claims to the contrary, the record is replete with facts that show that this occurred. The testimony of Sharon Hopkins about how many cars were used, where they were used.
Well, but this is a case about killing.
It's a case about aggravated murder, and one of the elements is prior calculation and design. And it's also a case about the specification, which deals with the killing of events that a witness for a trial that occurred in Lorain County.
Read this court's cases on prior calculation, is the decision on that. Probably got enough prior calculation to design just as the events in the county.
Well, I would say that the argument that you just made to you today more applicable to Tioga County. In other words, if you want to say that we got there just by accident or coincidence and he was killed then because there was a sudden turn of events, that argument is applicable to Tioga County, more so to Lorain County. And the strategic choice would be then to try in Lorain County where all these other things occurred. Otherwise, you'd be faced with arguing all the facts that occurred in Lorain County to defeat the argument you just heard this morning. But I would be faced with the exact same argument that you're giving me now, and I'm taking a weaker position. And that those facts that I'm arguing all happen in Lorain County.
So that doesn't make this one.
No, but it's up in the same attack that those facts are not denied her in this county. Look, the law is very clear that if one element occurs in both counties, you have a choice. And we took our choice to charge in our county for the informant was buying drugs for the police department in our county.
and assume to basically take care of our own and to not commit, which the law provides. I agree that there could be a trial in either county. We elected Lorain County.
What do you mean by take care of this?
I mean, our informant was killed in Lorain County, was cooperating with our police department. The Liberty Police Department did 99.9% of the investigation to bring this man to justice. Our Cuyahoga County is still going to, they're going to get the justice process coming down. What's different about Tri-County? County accepted. We have a correct man. It's not correct. It's not the correct venue. It's Lorain County. It was tribal in either county. And that is what the law provides, and that is a decision. How would the trial be? Can any judge write? Yeah. So I think I've just told you, Justice Spiker, that it would be more subject to the attack that they just may hear about what facts occurred where. It could be done in either county. There's no doubt about it. I need to hear that. But there's means of profit to it in Lorain County. That doesn't mean Lorain County wouldn't be bad. From a jury point of view, and just based upon that attack alone.
Prosecutor's office consulted in this case at all?
No. Only if the Cleveland Police Department did. It was not discussed by our office.
You did not discuss it with the prosecutor's office?
That's correct.
Obviously, if it was tried in Cuyahoga County, you would not have tried the case, or would you?
I don't know the answer to that, but that is more than likely.
More than likely what?
That I would not have charged it by it.
The murder was in Cuyahoga County.
Parts of the actual killing.
The actual, Smith actual
or
killing.
Ronald Valley County.
Was.
Correct.
And you made the determination yourself, without consulting anyone else in Cuyahoga County, that you were to try this case in Lorain.
Lorain County Prosecutor's Office made a decision to leave
this case. Who initially started the police investigation?
Well, the body was found in Cleveland. It was unidentified. Through efforts of the Elyria Police Department, an identity was provided.
How did the Elyria Police Department get involved?
Well, we were looking, say, Detective Blythe was looking for, you know, his informant. And they were, you know, he was examining for bodies that occurred that might be him, and he was eventually
is that
They don't just have to show that it's probable. He may not make it, and then it's within the court's discretion. We gave ample opportunity. There is testimony that shows that everybody was out looking for him with the same method that found him the first time, and we could not find him.
What's the, I don't know what the cases say about the requirement of the side proffering a witness to the efforts that have to be made in order to get the witness to trial. I mean, is there a standard for that?
I think we have to make reasonable and diligent efforts to bring him. We have to document it by the surveillance that we're being held, the warrant being obtained.
So the
defense counsel is deciding that ineffective assistance of counsel, the fact that trial counsel did not ask for a warrant. Well, the warrant was already issued.
But to determine the admissibility of that deposition, the court's review is of the efforts, whether the efforts made to bring the witness to trial were reasonable and diligent. That's
correct.
The standard that
we have to show that we could not obtain his appearance. And we made every effort to do so, and the efforts are contradicted. Again, other than
the contradiction is that this witness could have been kept in protective custody for how long would he have had to have been held from the time the witness or the depo to the trial?
Talking almost a year, and there's three defendants, and the problem with that, which is in the record, is he would have to be held in jail, which his father, his brother, and their co-defendant, Danny Galloway, was held, and
I gather protective custody, they're really not suggesting that he be incarcerated, but rather to some other situation where he's housed or outside the jail.
That involves a tremendous amount of expense. Yeah. And as I previously stated, the theory was, and the belief and the desire was, if we take his deposition and we inform these people, which was done in front of their lawyer, that this is usable, there's no need to kill this other person. It would be useless to do it. So taking our efforts to alleviate the need to protect the custody by taking the deposition. And the impracticality of housing him for three trials at public expense and under the police guard, if not in jail. And then constantly we've been arguing twice that this jail aspect would not be because of who was there also.
Well, counsel, that seems to me the county's making the county's housing decision. One housing in a jail.
Well, if we had to do it, yes, we could have done it.
Sure.
Do we want to keep this man who was a cooperating witness in jail for a year?
No. So the answer is you really didn't want to. You mentioned the warrant. That was the warrant issued at who's urging it for what purpose?
So the warrant, again, Mike Smith disappeared. He's still on probation. We obtained another warrant for his arrest for probation violation. The state.
So Lorain County prosecutor?
Well, I would say, I guess, the Lorain County prosecutor's office in conjunction with the Larry Police Department and his probation department.
So the probation department actually did that. Do they act through you?
They can act through us or they can act on their own.
So how did it work?
Well, it's my recollection that we got this warrant for this guy. We went to the probation office and said, look, you know where he is? They said, no, we can't find him. We need him. Let's get a warrant issued.
And that's his choice.
I don't know the answer to that. I assume it is in the testimony of the murderer's life, but I'm not for certain.
Thank you, Mr. Rosenbaum. Mr. Sugarman, you've saved about 15 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. First of all, and I neglected to do this when I first approached the bench, Mr. Sugarman, what I would like to correct the record is since time of the bear gate, there was an December people was filed, and that was a mistake that we made in our brief, and we would like to correct that and apologize to the court for our actual mission in that regard. In response to several of the questions that were raised, Michael Smith was in jail in Cuyahoga County 2 weeks before this trial. So we don't have to worry about this argument that it would have been some way to keep him for a year. He was in jail in his separate county suing before the trial, and the record does, like the Judge Lattis, admonish the prosecutor's office that this man should be brought as a witness at trial instead of the deposition. This deposition is granted for your testimony, not to give them some life, it's not a very long sentence to trial. And I think when we factor that into this, subpoena was not even issued. It's no answer to what was a warrant for his arrest. That warrant had been executed, yeah.
Again, the issue seems to be surrounding motives and speculating on the state didn't really want this fellow to show up. How would they have been harmed? But in any event, it isn't the real test, as we just discussed. The test is whether or not the court determines, and within its discretion, or whether it erred in determining that reasonable and diligent efforts were made to bring the witness.
That's absolutely the test.
Okay.
And I think when you see the record of what happened, what the court granted the motion to take that position, it was very clear.
What's our standard of review? Since the trial court found that there were reasonable and diligent efforts, what's our standard of review?
Abuse of discretion, and I think that was an error.
Which error or abuse of discretion? It is discretion, right? Because we know the standard is different.
It was an abuse of discretion.
Thank you. The difference, the distinction, what we have to get to here is that your argument is it's all speculation. The argument of the state is that it's reasonable inference. That it's not that there was explicit evidence of a plan, but you say any inference is, there is no reasonable inference, it's speculation. So there's the issue.
Inference must be drawn on evidence, and it's in those evidence, but there was no evidence.
But didn't they put a gun on the victim in Lorain County?
And I think that Mr. Rosenbaum's statement actually supports us to a great degree. There was no evidence, and he just admitted that in front of the court as to where this speedway was located. He says, well, the jury has no evidence in Lorain County. I don't know that.
Do we have the address, though?
I don't believe that was in the record. There was a street for that. I don't know if he just said that, but I don't believe that was in the record. There were big speedways, and they stopped that, and I don't know what happened.
I thought there was in Elyria. Mm-hmm. Isn't Elyria in Lorain County?
Yes.
And I thought there was evidence that took place in Elyria.
I don't believe so.
But wouldn't that be sufficient nexus for venue in Lorain County if the conspiracy could be shown that started there when he pulled a gun on him and said, don't make any stupid moves?
If that's what the record shows,
are you saying that the record didn't show that?
I don't believe that the record showed that. I think the prosecutor just admitted it. Of course, the record does not show that speedway was located in Lorain.
But those activities were taken somewhere. And you doubt that there's any proof of where they took place.
Correct. And I think that one thing that's always been a bother because is why did they set a fire run for 45 minutes? Whether they were having a good time. They were not for 45 minutes. They shared their threshold aims of other rooms. They were in murder because the coroner's office found that the guy had death. That makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah. One obvious reason is to get him a little more relaxed, and so that he'd go along with the plan.
I think if in fact there was evidence that this gun was there, and he had problems, that they could go along with the plan. I'm sure he's okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion.